Right, cool.
Hello and welcome to recording number 22 of Gary Gygax's Artifact of Evil, an annotated reading. Today is August 18th, 2021. All right, so we just have had where Gord and Geller and Chert have stayed behind on the Catlord's plane. They've gone to hear this sing, according to the Tigerware Turrup, and they've met Lord Lowen, the Seneschal, to the Catlord. And he's been, trying to talk some information out of them, especially Gord here, and he's noticed the Cat's Eye Stone. So this is a very, very interesting little bit here. I'm not sure. I'm going to start off. We're going to see where it goes. It's page 205 and the second paragraph from the end. There was no polite way to avoid this direct inquiry, so Gord simply told Lowen the truth. He'd taken it from a dead thief when he was but a lad. He also added that he was not aware of any special Deomer born by the ring. The Seneschal seemed satisfied, and the matter was dropped. Just then, the sing began. All right. Now, that is something that really surprises me here. At the beginning of Saga of Old City, there was a war between the beggars and the thieves. And Gord was sent out, and they were supposed to ambush, capture, and kill various thieves, especially captures, is what they wanted to do. So there was this high-level thief, a very powerful, like an assistant guildmaster, and Ladadov, I think his name was. And Gord got, I believe, his long-toothed dagger from that thief. But this seems to be implying that somewhere along the way, he killed a thief and got this ring. Now, I don't believe it's ever mentioned in, Saga. The first appearance of the ring...
It's mentioned.
That is actually mentioned, that he killed
the thief?
Which thief? Was it Ladadab?
No, it wasn't Ladadab. You're right with it. He got the dagger, but there was an unnamed thief that Gord and San killed first, and it says they got a ring.
Ugh. And that's supposed to be the Cat's Eye ring. Well, I'm really shocked. I really am.
I was too. It like really threw me through a loop, but it would explain how he didn't lose it in jail.
Yes, it does. It does. Now, it seems strange to me then that he would throw the ring out in front of Arentol during that when he was pretending to be the Valonese knight. Remember? And that's where Arentol sees it and thinks of it as so valuable.
Well, Arentol probably recognized it from the unnamed thief who was bearing it.
Yes, I mean, that was more likely than seeing it as valuable, as seeing it as something once belonging to a thief, because it's an important ring, and he either recognized it as belonging to that slain thief, and then calls into question everything about Sir Marcus. Gord's pretense, where he pretended to be Marcus the Valonese knight. I think it was Marcus.
I think it was too.
Wow. So back on page 52. Wow. All right. That does throw me. It makes a lot more sense in a way, although I had thought the ring was a mark of, and it may still be, but I had thought it was a mark of something from his parents. Well, there we go. That is a very that little statement right there and comparing it to what was in Saga of Old Sea, and this is exactly what I really like. So he gets the ring from a thief he kills just before he gets Ladadob.
I'll see if I can find the actual verbiage and put it up there.
But it's definitely not said to be the cat's eye ring at that point.
No, it's not. And I think one of the reasons Gord like probably showed it was his naivete, and he didn't really think it was that valuable.
Oh, yes, yes, that I can believe. I mean, although that was also at a time when Gord was making a lot of gold in his ventures. You know, he was now a, that's when he was being rumored about Black Cat, who they thought might be a drow thief. Again, that was a very interesting thing, you know, especially because I think that if we look at things, that this story, where it is kind of 576, you know,
right.
And back then, that would have been like 568, you know, just before Gord left the city for 8 years. Or it might even be a little more. So, you know, that's just, that is really astounds me. That really does. Cause, the whole thing there. And what I'm saying is it's not just the ring, it's that business at that point where they were commonly aware of drow, which really alters things. And I just wonder if he thought the giant invasion was more like 568 rather than, because like the only date we have is we have Emrydi Meadows, you know, where we can say, okay, that occurred in such and such a year. And the book, the folio, is 576. And this seems to be, you know, especially with the things that are starting to go on, we've got Uzfried, we've got them just discovering Zuckmodi, which is like freeing at the Temple of Elemental Evil. So, you know, I think we can maybe, if we sit down and work out between what's being said in setting material and it's some adventures, I think there's a point now where we might be able to work out, go back and work out the years. And so, yeah, that is just very interesting right there.
I found it.
Okay, you did. All right. I'm
about to post it. It's going to be a little long. Is that all right?
That's fine.
All right.
So we were just covering up here that on 205, this little paragraph where Gord tells Loen the Cenacle that the Cat's Eye Ring was actually recovered from a dead thief by, you know, early on in his career. And that is just, it's not what I had assumed. I had been assuming that this was what was in the box hidden by Leda, that he had either discovered it when he was 12 or it was discovered at the end of a Saga of Old City. And here we go.
He's still alive.
Yeah, and it's when, at the very beginning, when Gord was working with these three mercenaries, Gord and Sian, and they were, there was a thief in a gambling hall, and he leaves following these, this captain and some sailors, and there's a big fight, and then the fighters join in, and Gord and Sian join in, and they're able to kill this one thief by themselves between Gord and Sian, and then they're stripping the dead, especially as the melee going on, and they find a dagger and a ring from his finger.
And that's now, it.
This could definitely be the Cat's Eye Ring, or it could be that Gord is lying right here to Loen. And that may just be a ring that they got, and the Cat's Eye Ring might be as I thought. Now, one of the things is, what we're looking back here at Saga of Old City, And we're going to read in three more books, we're going to read City of Hawks. Now, a lot of things that we think we know are changed when we get to City of Hawks about the old Gord's upbringing and things. So there's changes going to come. And I'm not sure if I, one of the problems of having just read through the books and not really done like a notation on them is that you do scramble things. And I don't know. At this point, it seems that this story links with this situation that we're showing in the text channel back on Saga of Old City, page 52. And that may be true.
And later in Saga of Old City, it goes to mention when the thieves are being raided, when the beggars are being raided by the thieves, it says that Gord picks up the ring and his belongings and stuff.
Yes. And that is pre-Arentol encounter, because that's right at the very end. Yeah, all right. And so, you know, we have a little bit of, you know, little a bit of a confusion right here. Because it always bothered me that this very valuable ring Gord wouldn't have sold or had stolen from him when he was in the workhouse.
But it explains it because he found it when he wasn't poor.
Yes, and that is a very good explanation right there. All right. But I don't know where I got it into my head then that the ring was actually a legacy of his parents.
Well, and I think that hasn't been revealed yet.
Yeah. And like I said, when we get to City of Hawks, published by Gygax's New Infinities company, after he's gone from TSR, it is like restarting the series with that. So we do get some different information, which may change all this that we're seeing here from the TSR book, Saga of Old City.
Yeah, I'm glad I got to read a little ahead on this, so because it let me do a lot of research on the book.
Oh yeah,
I searched Saga of Old City for every occurrence of the word ring, and this is what came up.
I know, and I got to thank you for that because I'm not. I'm actually when I end for the night, that's it, and it comes as a surprise to me what I'm reading, so I'm not doing the research on the material here.
Oh, it's fine. You're doing enough.
And it's also, I want to kind of be surprised by stuff. It's, you know, I've read it 7 times, but it still surprises me. And
I was so waiting to do this last night, but we got right there. But yeah. It's great. It's still great.
That is amazing. I like it when it twists and ties around like mm-hmm.
I mean, especially with this, because it's a question we've been asking.
Yeah, I mean, this is not a small matter. I mean, I get into such minutia here that, you know, some people might just want to strangle me and say, oh, get on with it. Don't talk about a box, you know, like Lita's box. But the ring, definitely. This is a very important item. As far as I remember, it's a very, and it was also mentioned by Gygax at the end of Saga of Old City that the ring is a very important item, as well as extremely powerful. So, I this is not just minutia. This really is, as far as now, this crosses in a way from story to some game mechanics and definitely to lore, because this ring would belong to somebody within the cat lore. Well, I shouldn't say that, but this is a powerful item in the story or in the setting. So even if we didn't have Gord, the ring would exist. The ring is a separate item of lore from the Gord story. So what we find out about it is important to find these things out. And it does affect the campaign in as much as any powerful item does. There's things that are vastly more powerful in a sense. At this point, not really. The Vecna stuff has become such a treasured part of the setting. It wasn't at this time. It wasn't, I believe, to Gygax's taste the whole Vecna thing, but it has become, Axarak with Tomb of Horrors and Vecna, they have become very landmark in the popular setting.
But yeah, they've transcended Greyhawk in some ways.
Which is fine, because neither of them actually were. I mean, Axarak in Tomb of Horrors was written as a tournament module with no Greyhawk connections, and the Vecna stuff was just put in the book. It was in the DMG-1, and it talked a little about Greyhawk, but it wasn't well liked. I believe it might have been introduced by the Blooms, the Hand and Eye Vecna. I did think they were a little cool, but the way that things have gone with the Empire of Vecna and all this stuff has really left a bad taste in my mouth. So it's not really something I particularly like, but I can see where, it's inspiring, greatly inspiring for a lot of people. And so anyway, this ring, in a sense, I don't want to, and what I'm dragging from the books that are going to come may not be accurate, because again, I'm really shocked by all this, and I have either forgotten or confused a lot of information here from casual reading over what we're trying to do here, which is kind of casual scholarly work. You know, this is a very rough recording, and it's a rough gathering of information, and it is meant down the road for people who are interested to refine and maybe print out and come out with something in a more dry version. But this is, a bit of a lively, lively but scholarly work, where we are trying to take these first rough recordings and pull out everything we can that can later be trimmed down and made into more of a documentation. And as it's commented here, Vecna seems overdone, and but it is still, and it was tantalizing in the AD&D DMG, but at a certain point the tantalization became, there was like a surfeit of Vecna for me, even if you're, dwelling on milk and honey, that can just pale if it's what you have to eat every day. So there was just so much Vecna that I just, it wasn't that, I liked it a little bit when it was an idea, but that became overwhelming. Now, this ring isn't quite like that, but it is something like it is something that you would have seen like in the artifact guide, I think, of the DMG. So what we're getting is something right from Gygax's mind, linked with Gord here, but it doesn't have to be. All right, I'm going to restart. It's page 205 in the final paragraph. What followed seemed to Gord to be the worst attempt at music he had ever heard. There was endless screeching and yowling, accompanied by basso growls and falsetto howls. It was, in fact, a mass caterwauling performed by feline and were-feline throats, from house cat to tiger ware. The cathedral ceiling hall was filled with creatures who seemed to find this wonderful. But the three humans came near to... near to clapping their hands over their ears and fleeing. After a time, though, the general chorus broke up, groups going here and there to continue the festivity in discreet company, more or less. "Let's walk in the garden," Terup suggested. Gord found that a fine idea, despite the occasional clumps of yowling singers that were there. Eventually, even these serenades were ceased, and the remainder of the night was pleasant indeed. Break. That is the end of chapter 18, page 206, which ends on a high note there for Gord. We break off quickly from to one of Gord's romantic interludes. And of course, the humor of a like a cat opera going on there with yowlings and screechings. I definitely wanted to throw a boot at them. Every once in a while, Gygax gets me one of me to throw a boot at him. All right. It is chapter 19, page 207, paragraph 1. 3 days later, their host returned from whatever business he had been about. The Cat Lord said nothing about his affairs, and the three men who were his guests dared not make impolite inquiry. They had been well cared for and comfortable. The enforced inactivity galled them, however, and all were itching to be back on the trail of the artifact they sought so desperately. Geller broached the matter of their return, and the Master Cat said that the matter would be accomplished to their satisfaction in due course. Break. Now, I don't know why they didn't just leave with Melth. You know, if they were worried about actually worried about pursuing the artifact. Now, one thing that occurs to me about this whole situation, this is basically the encounter with Beorn in The Hobbit. I realize that as into that really should immediately have occurred to me, but right now, just this paragraph here, it reminded me so much of when, you know, Beorn tells them to stay and not get out at night, and there's all these bears. And they didn't quite do that here, but Bjorn's gone for a day or two, and when he comes back, he's very happy with the Hobbit and with Gandalf, because he found out that what they said was exactly true. Now, there's not quite that here, but it this whole Cat Lord business seems very, very similar to Bjorn's holding to me. Gygax was definitely, handled it. Well, and it's coming, yeah, it's like Beorn was basically like the bear lord, and here we have the cat lord, and Beorn offers them, sanctuary after they were rescued by the eagles, but they were almost killed off by the goblins. And then at the last moment, a little Deus Machina comes down in the form of the eagles rescuing them, and here we have that scroll of banishment. So I don't know if it was a conscious thought by Gygax, but it really seems that he's taken a bit of Bombadil as well, because Cat Lord isn't threatening at all. And again, yes, Bombadil is another example of this Deus Machina, where they can't possibly, they're not going to be able to succeed against the Barrow Whites, but suddenly there's Bombadil. Now they do call him up. The Ravens and the Horn Society are like Saruman's avian allies. It is, some of the things are a little Tolkien-esque. I mean, Narl is similar to the Witch King, the head of the Nazgul. We have this whole business with the Cat Lord seems very similar to the encounter with Beorn. I mean, if you look at Star Wars, they took the first two movies from the Flash Gordon serial. When they're on that one planet, what is it? I think Bespin is taking, right from the business with the Hawk people. And they serve him up Flash Gordon to the Emperor, just like, they end up getting served up to the Darth Vader. And so, people are always grabbing little ideas. Now, I don't know if Gygax was really conscious of this, but this Cat Lord, I just seems very much to me to be hobbit. And with a little combination of the artifact being similar to the ring. You know, I mean, if you just take Saruman, if you take Sauron as Tharizdun, or even what was the name of Sauron's boss was, I forget his name. But again, there's
Melkor.
Melkor, and there's a lot of things about this that seem very... you know, very much taken from Tolkien. And a lot taken from Fritz Lieber. I actually enjoy those sections quite a bit, where he was getting inspired by Lieber, and the story is very Fairford and Mauser. And I don't quite enjoy it as much when we're dealing with these grandiose plots and we're dealing on a kind of Lord of the Rings level. So, you know, with the epic. And the story has reached epic levels right here. But, yeah, so I'm just going to say that this, I really think that this business here is very Tolkien-esque. And I know that later on, talking with Gygax, that he really denied the influence of Tolkien. But the problem is that the writer... is often unaware of what's influencing them. You know, artists suddenly become aware that their work is very similar to another artist, and they swear they aren't inspired or influenced by that artist. You know, it's just what happens. You cannot avoid influence. If you try to say, like, I'm not going to be like Bach, and anytime you're a musician, anytime music comes up that seems like Bach, you remove it from your work, then you're like Bach because you're influenced, because you're a normal person would have the little influences, and instead you're consciously cutting something out. So if he was able to reflect and consciously cut out the Tolkien influence, it would show, because most people have some Tolkien influences in their work. You know, it's just such, you know, a monumental piece with so many archetypal themes. So anyway, this just seems very, very much like that. Now, we're back at paragraph one here, where the Cat Lord has gone out on his affairs, and he's come back, and he has told them that they will be going with satisfaction in due course. And it's commented that Egg wasn't the most creative writers in a literary sense, and I well, to a degree, but you know, you really it's very hard once you've read something then not to have that influence one way or the other. Either it seeps into your work, or you consciously cut it out, and in that sense you lose the natural themes that are brought up in Tolkien. And I mean, Tolkien was an original. His entire stories very much follows the Old Testament. You know, it's and he took a lot from the Old Norse sagas and Eddas. And, you know, and yeah, it's impossible to unthink Tolkien once you've read him closely. And you either... you know, are conscious of the Tolkien influence or unconscious, or you're consciously cutting them out. All right, that's all story though. That's just lore for the setting, but it is something to prepare your gear, he told them, and be ready for departure soon. Please be so kind as to see to Gord's things, too, for I would speak to him for a bit before you take your leave. Puzzled, Gord watched Chert and the one-eyed bard depart for their quarters. What could the Cat Lord wish to talk to him about? Granted, they had met once before, but that matter had been satisfactorily settled to both his and Gord's evident benefit. This matter was of another sort, and only the Master Cat knew. But Gord would soon learn of it, he reflected. Your thoughts are plain, Gord. The comment startled the young adventurer from his pondering, but the dark-haired man spoke on, ignoring this. Don't be surprised at such stuff as that. You wonder what I am at, and I'll be blunt and plain. Your mission is known to me, and I approve. No active part will I take, but I will give you some information that may assist you in your coming adventures. You are aware of the second key? Yes, as well as the first and the third, and what they will do if ever joined, the Cat Lord said somberly. It is now time for me to tell you about the ring you have worn for some years. You asked me once, and I spoke not, for it is one that I myself made long ago. There are 8 others like it, but that is something altogether different. Are you now aware of any of its benefits? Gord nodded slowly. I think it enabled me to see clearly through intervening clouds, with vision unnaturally sharp and close, but that is all. The Diomer of the Ring includes such vision, and the seeing of light not normal for the human eye as well. Even the sharpest-eyed cat sees not as clearly as you when you employ the power of that ring. That is but a minor benison, which it conveys. It has a principal power. It saves your life, but only if you are attuned to it. You are somehow, and this is most surprising to me. It was not meant for humans. Not meant for humans, Gord repeated stupidly, unable to comprehend this. Nevertheless, it worked. That, Gord, is how you managed to twist that banishment spell as you did. The casting would never have affected one so powerful and well-shielded as the Reaper when he ventures upon the prime material plane. The ring expended a portion of its diomer and brought you and your friends here. Now there are 8 usages remaining. For all know, a cat has 9 lives. At that, Gord had to grin. The Cat Lord was likewise smiling. It will save me 8 more times. That it will, probably. There are always situations in which its diomer can be negated, so do not become overconfident, the Cat Lord warned. That I will remember, said Gord with feeling. Do. The ring has certain other powers you should be aware of, for they do not operate properly without knowledge, sometimes only with concentration, as with the vision power. Those who are, or would prove to be, ill-disposed toward you, are seen in sinister light, thus alerting you of their malign nature. Similarly, should you think on it, most devices and traps will be discernible, so you will notice the covering of a concealed pit, some fell trap loaded with poison or blades, or see in glowing outline magical guards to snare the unwary. That I have seen in Rigello's stronghold. Had I but known, the prize might have been mine. Gord's voice trailed off as he looked accusingly at the master cat. You cheated. Unjustly accused, smiled the Cat Lord contentedly. How could I know what understanding you had of the ring? Besides, never was there an obligation to explain such to you. I do so now out of my kindness and a desire to defeat those who would bring ruin to all. I'm going to break right here. I wanted to mention that he brings up Rigello. Now, I believe that is the Knight Errant story, where it is... where he meets the Cat Lord. It's mentioned up above. I'm sorry, the name is...
Cats versus Rats, I think.
Cats versus Rats. Now, we ran into Plincourt in another story, and Plincourt's the vampire with a scroll.
That was the Odd Alley one.
Yeah, the odd occurrence on Odd Alley. Now, this one, I believe Rigello is the character, one of the characters in this... Cats versus Rats story. Now, we also have, again, a little Tolkienism with the Cat Lord having made these eight rings, you know. That is much less so, though, because the idea of magic rings is very, very commonplace. And even in Tolkien, there was supposed to be the idea that other magic rings, besides being crafted by the great elves and by Sauron, had been created. It's kind of, you know, in the context here. Now, with Gygax's Greyhawk, we really don't see that many magic items, but we're only seeing the world through a very narrow lens of what Gord is encountering, and not a whole world of different various adventures and adventurers. So, but yeah, you know, so far that ring, now, we are up, like, on an epic level here, so even though Gord has had this ring for a long time, since he was unaware of its functions, or maybe the ring might, even if you look at a game mechanic, might require a character to be of higher level for some of these functions to actually work, just as a mechanic, you know. I don't know, Gygax could explain that through lore, for some reason, you know, why experience levels in the mechanics would work to lore, where you know, gaining certain insights and knowing about the ring, they actually give it to you. But, you know, there is a combination here between the game mechanics and the actual life of this story and how things go on. And now this section, again, this is we're learning more about this ring. Now, Gord, he is even, you know, he is, the ring existed before him, the ring existed without him, if you don't use Gord, and the ring will exist beyond him if at some point his character is no more. So, you know, it is very interesting to get the information here about the ring. Now, where am I? I'm sorry here, I was just thrown a little. It is page 209 and the fourth paragraph. Gord could not but agree with that. True, I do thank you for this intelligence, and for your hospitality during our stay. Please convey my fond farewell to Lady Tirup and all the others. You're welcome, but not so fast. There is yet a little more. Anxious as you and your companions are, this hiatus will be beneficial, I think, said the Cat Lord in a serious tone. He poured Gord and himself a pale greenish wine, handed the young adventurer one of the crystal goblets, and then went on. You are a thief, acrobat, swordsman, and more. Have you ever considered how it is that you are able to have such skills to gain and improve them so readily? I have. Your performance in the small contests here must have been spectacular, for I've heard repeatedly about it. Lowen, my trusted seneschal, actually thinks you might be dangerous. No matter. The ring you wear conveys sure-footedness, agility, the cat-like property of landing on your feet, and magical ability to climb as a cat does as well. Test this and you will quickly learn. You must already unconsciously draw upon some of the power of the gem. All right, so I'm going to break right here because it has been throughout the book, Gord has been exceptionally, you know, powerful. And it's very hard to explain in game mechanics terms how he is able to, you know, he's continually learning things and he's continuing doing things greater than the game mechanics would allow for a normal player character. Now, if Gord, you know, as a DM can simply overrule anything, he can give extra benefits, he can do anything he wants with the game, but, you know, normally Gygax has been working through the story, and a lot of it has been following the way the mechanics work, and give good examples of spell casting and thief abilities. But again, Gord has been kind of overpowered. Now, with the having this ring and these abilities, it seems to me that right here, Gygax is maybe addressing some of complaints about the power of Gord, about him being an overpowered character. He has been able to do several things that are annoyingly overpowered, like striking the rider of the Green Dragon, which I mentioned, which the ring or not is a little annoying, and pulling the, maybe even having the right spell scroll at the right time might be something related to the power, the life-saving power of that ring, because with magic, you can pretty much, explain anything, but you run the risk of shattering a certain sense of disbelief in the game. When you deal with such fantastic things, you try not to overwhelm people with so many superpowers, because then they start losing personal connection, and they start feeling like the game becomes more like a child's game instead of a game where there's real risk and real rewards. If they can just be plucked out of danger, by some MacGuffin, it's the scroll, it's the ring, it's whatever. It's just when they run into trouble, they're going to be saved.
And so, even little things, like when he was jumping from horse to horse in Badwell.
Yes. And, it definitely is, there's definite problem there with Gord being well overpowered, even. Now, Gord is very high level. I mean, it's just, I don't think a lot of people, because we know he's over 10th. At this point. And I'm a little sad at that, because here we are just on the second book. We're about two-thirds through, but we're still, if he's at 10th already, we're looking for a pretty high level for the rest of the series.
Right, the fact that he can read scrolls shows you that.
Yes, and what happens is it becomes harder and harder to tell a good story. It's still possible, but it's just, at a certain point, like they had to give Superman kryptonite because it got harder and harder to write a story about somebody who wasn't going to be hurt by anything, Yeah. And so, here, this is kind of reminds me, this paragraph here about the Cat Lord saying, well, this ring has been helping you, even if you didn't suspect it. So what I kind of look at is maybe the complaints I had about Gord being able to do too much, a lot of other people might have written to Gygax or mentioned to him in places, and he wanted to kind of address that. Because it does, this little bit of explanation does go back and say, well, the reason Gord is so powerful, it's the ring. He's got tons of natural ability, and that is kind of explained later on as well. But then he's got this ring of huge, I mean, one of the eight rings created by the Cat Lord. So he, right away, he has this super powerful ring, and then Gygax can go back and say, well, anything that Gord was doing in excess of what a player should be able to do in an AD and campaign is explained because he has the magic MacGuffin, and it is going to allow all these things. And like it was about Melf. Melf was an extraordinarily powerful character to the point that this spear that he had, that was kind of like a Rod of Lordly Parts spear, that was taken away from him by his dad at some point, because it was just, it was a little too powerful for the campaign. And I think Gord here in anybody's campaign would be, it'd be very hard to be around him as other player characters when somebody could do everything and had all these powerful, super powerful magic and all these abilities, I just think he could easily be an NPC, you know, an irritating NPC, but as a player, he would be, you know, he would not be someone you wanted to adventure with, because, you know, you'd want to get a chance at something, you know, and he seems to be a thief who can fight and tumble and, you know, and do all the thief's things and do all the fighter things. And, you know, it just gets a little overwhelming. All right, but here we have an explanation of why. You know, sure-footedness, landing on the feet, climb, see, avoid being killed. There's you know, tons of things with this ring. All right, I'm going to restart. It's page 209 and the second paragraph from the end. You say you had this ring created, interjected Gord. You tell me of its great power. Why not also explain the reason for making such rings as this and its eight mates? Oh, wow. The Cat Lord stared at Gord, assessing him carefully. He said nothing save honest desire. He saw nothing save honest desire for knowledge and a keen mind trying to discover what lay behind the matter. The Master Cat spoke. Each of the nine is similar, yet subtly different, differs from the others. You are truly attuned to the ring you wear. Its yomer will enable you to transform yourself into a cat of midnight coat, tomcat or great leopard as you desire. Fitting, isn't it, for one who styles himself as you do at times? At this, Gord chuckled wryly. Yes, I am astounded and pleased at all this. More and more wondrous it grows, but still I am at a loss to understand the reason for the existence of these nine magic circlets. Each was made as a token and favor for certain humans, let us say. The nine were bestowed as gifts. Of the other eight I know, just as I now know the whereabouts and owner of this one. I was surprised to learn how you acquired it, for I had supposed another manner altogether. You told true when you related to Loan the means by which you gained it. There are unanswered questions for us all, it would seem. Now let us join your friends, for it is the hour of leave-taking. Break. All right, so there's so much unreliable narrator. And yes, Chris points out it's nine rings, you know, cat lords make nine rings, which nine lives, nine rings, that's fine, you know, I mean, the nine rings from Sauron, that's, you know, it's just,
let's go.
Yeah, nine has always been a cardinal number, you know, for occult stuff, so, you know, it goes fine with the cat things. All right, and we're one of our listeners is leaving. We've got to say goodnight, but we've still got about 10 minutes left here. And so I stopped here because I did want to discuss this business here about the Cat Lord confirming what Gord says to Loan about getting the ring from the dead thief. I was really surprised the Cat Lord said that. But there's a little thread dangling from that about how the Cat Lord thought it would be in a different manner that Gord would have required this. Mm-hmm. So I think that, you know, leads to, you know, other questions. And honestly, I wish that almost everything they did in here had at least as many questions when you've been answered some as when you went in wanting to know. That's always fun. I always like it when you're not told everything and that there's questions left over. I like questions to be answered, but I always like it when, even though you've answered those questions, other questions are raised. So I like this little string he's left dangling.
It's also pretty cool how Loan says that what Gord said was the truth. So they cast some kind of detect lie or something on it, and they know that Gord relayed an accurate, the accurate portrayal of how he acquired the ring.
Yes, and that I think is unsurprising, because Loewen had already, his questions were not casual. And again, we have this business much slighter than it has been, but again, of discernment. So Gord recognized that the questions coming from Loewen were dangerous, and they were also, it wasn't casual. He was actually trying to get the information out of them. And Loewen and both were using some hidden, subterfuge where Gord and Gellar didn't want to talk about the artifacts, so they had to talk around that. And Loewen was, recognized that and was, not trying to press them, but at the same time was getting information out of them. So, part of one of the things that Gygax always does in his writing is that there are there's things that are happening below the obvious level. This is not just like your typical Conan story. Gygax was not, I don't feel he was a bad writer. I just think that it wasn't what he was driven to do. And I know that as stories went, I enjoyed some of his later books, because after he left the Gygax, the Greyhawk books, he wrote two or three more for his next game that was designed for Dangerous Journeys, which he did with GDW, Game Designers Workshop, after his New Infinities company was crushed by TSR. And so when he had to abandon that, he went on to do something with another company, which again was crushed by TSR. not exactly wheels within wheels, but things are not exactly what they seem. And one of the things that Gygax does very often is he will do something and you'll have some questions. Well, why'd that happen? That seems strange. And two or three pages later, or one or two pages later, he'll answer exactly why he did it, but he won't say it up front. So, as I'm going through this and taking it apart, lots of times I'll say, well, why'd he do that? And then two paragraphs later, it'll be, oh, well, that's why he did it, you know. So I find that enjoyable. I think he does a lot of things where he leaves questions and explains them later on. And like now in this book, he is doing some things that occur in other stories, not just like Saga of the Old City, but in these short stories that he wrote for Knight Errant, which was is an anthology book of short stories rather than a regular novel. Oh, yes, there are three of those Dangerous Journeys books Chris puts up here. Yeah, Anubis Murders, Samarkand Solution, and Death in Delhi. And I honestly enjoyed them, and I also felt that Gygax was a little bit freed to do what he really wanted to do with a campaign of an alternate Earth. Not just one that was similar to Earth, but one that was actually Earth, but with a lot of classical magic and history into it, but altered. And I think Dangerous Journeys was closer in a way to what he was looking for in Greyhawk than he'd actually done originally. But, you refine yourself. And I think, after having read those books, I think his qualities as a writer were getting better. Now, that's a lot of books. I mean, that is, by the time he finishes Death in Delhi, that is 9 novels and 1 anthology. So, that's a lot of writing there. That's a whole lot. And some writers never in their whole lives manage to write that much. And other writers are able to write dozens or even scores of books. There are 6 Greyhawk novels, 1 Greyhawk anthology by Gygax, and that is impressive. That's like 2,500 pages of material we're going to have to look for. All right, and what we're closing on now here is we're on page 210, and so we've done gone through over 560 pages between the two books so far. All right, we are very close to the end. I'm just going to read a little more here, and we are on page 210, and it is paragraph 5 from the end. Cat Lord accompanied Gord to the upper floor, where Chert and Geller waited. All was in readiness, so they went immediately to a secluded chamber in the Master Cat's own portion of the ring-shaped villa. The room was filled with strange and bizarre trappings and equipment, but Gord had no chance to examine any of it. "Over there," the Cat Lord said, pointing to a place on the floor. "See the nine-pointed star between the gold sun and silver moons. There is ample room for all of you to stand within its confines. Lord Melf left us by means provided by one who favors him, but I have only this more prosaic device for magical conveyance. I have attuned it to the castle of the Archmage Tensor. Do you know him?" The three adventurers replied in the negative, although Geller stated that he had heard of him by reputation. "Tensor is a kindred spirit and allied to me. He is aware of your imminent arrival, so there will be no unpleasant surprises when you appear there." "Where is the castle of this Tensor located?" asked Geller. "In the Karn Hills near the shores of Nir Dev. Tensor will have information for you, I am sure, as he keeps careful track of events of the nature you are concerned with. You should trust him, and do not hesitate to seek his assistance in your quest. He is likely to aid you in some fashion." "That is welcome news," Geller said with relief. "It is most likely that we will need to be far to the north of where you send us. If he will but speed us to Chendal or some similar locale, we will be most in his debt." All right, break. All right, it's page 211. I'm breaking here because we're just about at the end of the night. And we have now taken another step, forward. Here we have Tensor. He was Ernie Gygax's player. Human. What level was he? He was a 14th level. Tensor magic user. Wow. So again, one of the most powerful magic users out there. I believe Mordekainen was always more powerful than Tensor. But it's interesting to learn here that he's allied with the Cat Lord. We get a little information. There is a picture coming up that we'll deal with tomorrow, I believe, of Tensor's castle. Tensor's in the Karn Hills. I think he's that's went along with second edition, that he was in the Karn Hills. This is the little write-up from the Rogues Gallery, which is an excellent little first edition. Has a wonderful Errol Otis cover in a bluish-white coloring. It's a wonderful little book. It has a lot of lore because it has a lot of information about characters and also some information about random encounters within certain locales of the Greyhawk setting. So it's something I heartily recommend. Yes, I love that illustration right there. The horn guy in the middle, I believe, is Tensor, looking a little Gygax-like, mm-hmm. which he was, you know. I think the little hobbit on the end is actually Biff. And the dwarf, I believe, is Obmi with his warhammer. Looks a little scythe-like there. Not really what a warhammer looks like, but I'm not sure, but I think that's Mordekainen, Biff, and Obmi right there. A very interesting part here, something that is heavily lore, where we can look at then some information about Tenser, what he's involved in, who he's allied with. He's allied with the Cat Lord. A little more information about the Cat Lord's manse there in a circular villa. We have that transporting square there. Some things about his character. He knows, of course, who Melf's, is beholden to, Morden Kanan. He knows that Melf and the other two have left, and it's absolutely no problem for him. I am wondering about some of the motivations of them being on this quest and splitting up and not all leaving together. I'm these are things that may reveal themselves later on. Well, it is now past 7:01, and I'm going to call up Craig and kick him out.
Good night.
Good night. Fairly enjoyable reading tonight.
Yeah, it was great.